Good afternoon. The time is now 2:01 and the July meeting of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability shall begin. My name is Tamika Collier. I'm the chair. We do have a quorum here. Sitting in the dais with me is Darren Sobin, and joining us on the phone are Shamari Wade and Norma Hutchinson. Turning to the adoption of the agenda, are there any motions to amend the agenda?
I would like to make a motion to amend the agenda to add an executive session at the beginning of this meeting in order to discuss personnel matters, including employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of a government appointee pursuant to DC Official Code 2-75, 2-575B10.
I second the motion. I'm all in favor of approving the agenda as amended by Mr. Sobin, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the agenda has been adopted pending that amendment. Therefore, we will move into executive session. Let me get that language.
So, Michael Syndrome, Madam Chair, does that mean when you're through, you'll patch me back in?
Yes, sir, Mr. Syndrome.
All right, because you forgot about me earlier. Not good.
We will move into executive session pending a motion to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-5. I'm sorry, we will move to executive session to discuss personnel matters, including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government employees pursuant to DC Code Section 2-575B10. Can I get a motion on that, please?
A motion to move into executive session as stated by the chairperson.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Mr. Wade?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we will move into executive session. The time is now 2:04. We could clear the office. We will notify you when you can come back. Okay, we're back. And I wanted to make one clarification. We have noticed previously in executive session with several areas of exemptions under the OMA. And what we did is we took one of the previously noticed matters, the personnel matters, out of order. So we will continue with a later executive session for the remaining matters, but it is one executive session that we just split up to discuss the personnel matters out of order, just for clarification.
We did it so you guys wouldn't have to wait around all day.
Right. So the next matter on the agenda is the approval of the June 7th, 2018 meeting. I'll give you a few minutes to look over those, and then I'll entertain a motion to approve to adopt the meeting minutes. We did adopt the agenda before. Yes. All right, all those in favor of adopting the June 7th, 2018 meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 All right, those meeting minutes have been adopted. Next, we will turn to the Director of Open Government. I would like to formally announce the new Director of Open Government that the board has appointed, Nikhil Allen. Ms. Allen has almost 20 years of legal experience, the last 16 of those with the district. She comes to us from Octo, where she worked on IT policy, including the DC open data policy, and served as the Octo FOIA officer. So welcome, Ms. Allen.
Thank you.
In terms of the report from the office, Mr. Flowers, or?
Well, I would like to present the report, and if there are any substantive questions, I would like to direct them to Mr. Flowers or Mr. Barden.
Perfect.
The office has continued to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons are entitled to full and complete information regarding the affairs of the district government and the actions of those who represent them. I would like to take this opportunity to thank Attorney Johnny Barton and our applications engineer, Wada Kidab, for continuing to perform their duties at a high level during the period prior to my taking office. I believe that I have found the office in good standing as I undertake my duties. I'd like to start with the informal advice presented by the office. Since the June meeting, the Office of Open Government responded to 14 FOIA and 16 Open Meeting Act informal requests for legal advice and assistance. Trainings. The Office of Open Government conducted one open meeting training for the Major Crash Task Force. Advisory opinions. The OOG opined in OOG number 0001-1.0418 FOIA-AO that is inconsistent with FOIA for the MPD to require requesters of certain records about themselves, first-party requests, to attach to the request proof of their identity at the time of the submission, and that attorneys making FOIA requests on behalf of clients supply proof of identification for the client or the attorney, such as a copy of the client's or attorney's government-issued identification and proof of representation, such as a signed authorization or retainer agreement. The opinion provides, first, absent a statutory or regulatory authority, MPD's identity verification requirement does not have the force of law. Two, in the District of Columbia, the Duncan Ordinance controls the release of adult arrest records, but the release of arrest records under the Duncan Ordinance is nonetheless subject to FOIA. Three, where the requester is seeking information about themselves concerning accident reports, incident reports, or reports about 911 calls, MPD may not require proof of the requester's identity to process the request. Number four, where attorney submits a FOIA request for these records about a client, MPD may not require the attorney to attach proof of the client's identity, the attorney's identity, and proof of representation. This is because district FOIA and its regulations do not mandate these requirements. In these instances, MPD may treat the FOIA request as a third-party request and properly redact or withhold the record as appropriate. And fifth, to the extent that the district's online FOIA portal does not permit such requests to be made, the request should be submitted to MPD outside the online portal. The second matter is number OOG00076.0618, Resolution of Complaint, ANC. Whether the ANC Open Meetings Act regulates public meetings of advisory neighborhood commissions. The OMA does not. The OOG's dismissal of this complaint states that the OMA specifically excludes from the statute's coverage ANCs, and two, that it is the Advisory Neighborhood Councils Act of 1975, which governs the conduct of ANC meetings, not the OMA. Subsequent to receipt of the complaint, the complainant, a former ANC, in an electronic communication to Attorney Advisor Barton, asked who had oversight over ANCs. Attorney Barton's response provided that, one, the Office of ANCs and its executive director could be helpful concerning the issue. Two, the Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety has oversight responsibilities. And three, in the language taken from the DC auditor's website, that the auditor has financial oversight over ANCs.
So, as you know, I have some familiarity with this particular one. So thank you, Mr. Flowers, for helping me craft a response to inquiries about it. But one of the things that came out of it is for the complaint portal, once you file a complaint and you hit submit, you get an email response with a link at the bottom of it. That link doesn't work. I tried two times creating a complaint on my own, and I was forwarded the email confirmation for a third complaint. And for all three instances, there was, when you click on the link, it says not authorized. So that's something that we should look at. And I believe the information that is on the DC Auditor's website is now outdated.
Is that what we think?
It says, the language says something to review your complaint or check status or something like that.
I've seen that many times. I've just never clicked on the link. Because, again, what we receive and what the complainant sees are not the same. For example, that certification, I've never seen that. We don't receive that.
Oh, well, okay. So the certification was a different issue that we could talk about if you want. What I'm saying is,
I'm curious about that because we do need to fix that.
Yes, as a complainant, you receive an email confirmation. So I did two test complaints in the system, and the email confirmation includes a link at the bottom that you should be able to click on and pull up your complaint. That did not work in either of the three instances.
Yeah, I think we have to work with Mr. Kataba on that.
Yes.
The certification versus an oath, I understand the distinction, but as a complainant, I could understand their confusion over a formal versus an informal investigation. If they are required to certify the information they submit. And for the board members, we're talking about the difference between a formal and an informal investigation, which is triggered by a written complaint. And I think the policy of the office is that under oath language in the statute requires a notarized document. That's not what the language in the statute says. And maybe it should be clarified in the regulation, but the question became whether submitting the document online where you are required to certify under penalty of perjury and a declaration, not an oath, whether that would trigger the procedures for a formal investigation versus an informal investigation.
Well, it is in the rules. Not the statute. The statute is very broad, just as written complaint. The rules would specify what more we're looking for. So
right.
If we're going to clarify it, we'd have to do it there.
But it's going to raise that issue when we got over to your side of the house. But I'm sorry, continue.
Okay. The third matter is OOG-0076. 0.06.8 Resolution of Complaint DCPCSB. Whether DCPCSB's failure to provide the statutory 30-day notice to an ANC prior to considering a lease for a charter school was a violation of the Open Meetings Act. The OOG concluded that there was no violation of the OMA. This is because the OMA does not empower OOG with the statutory authority to investigate or enforce violations of the laws governing noticed to public bodies from the ANCs.
And so you'll notice, Ms. Allen, this is the second one just this week about ANCs. And so that might be something that you look at and report back to the board, just the jurisdiction over ANCs and whether some of that should be changed.
We will look into it and get back to you. Thank you. And the last matter is a FOIA request response. On June 26, 2018, the OOG timely transmitted 258 responsive documents to the requester to reply with the request for any record that mentions the name of a former employee. The response also directed the requester to the audio recording of the COST's July 19, 2017 public meeting published on the open.dc.gov website. This concludes my report. Are there any other questions?
I have no questions.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And to the board, thank you again for entrusting me with this important position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Brent Wolfenbarger, report by the Director of Government Ethics. Update on our operations, recap of the previous month's activities. We opened 7 investigations during this month. 5 the previous month and 1 in April of 2018. We closed 3 compared to 1 in the previous month and 0 in April 2018, bringing our current investigative caseload open to 35, which is an increase of 3 versus the 32 last month. There are 8 investigations that have been stayed as inactive, 1 due to a Maryland court fugitive situation, 1 in D.C. Superior Court from the OEA, 4 are pending an OIG investigation, and 2 are pending Civil False Claims Act complaints by the Office of the Attorney General. Publication and reporting obligations. We have prepared the third quarter complaint report for publication. That report is in the Dropbox. We're still working to address problems we encountered with the financial disclosure statement filing system and are mindful that we have to publish the required list soon. We additionally have to determine when to publish the link that permits the public to retrieve filed reports. I go into this in greater detail under the financial disclosure statement portion of the report. Bottom line is when you compare the numbers now to where we have been in previous years, taking into consideration the ANCs that have not filed and the DCPS situation, our numbers are very similar to where they were in past years. So we feel much more confident about moving forward with the publication of those lists and the publicization of the search function than we were during the board's last meeting. Trainings, outreach, attended by staff. Our staff have attended a number of trainings since the last meeting. We participated in a webinar on data analysis toolkit for attorneys and had a records retention policy meeting with the DC archivist to help educate our formulation of policy retention schedules for the different types of documents that we have in-house. That's a major project that our 2 DLP interns are working on this summer to get all of the hard copy documents that we have digitized and organized for long-term storage. General Counsel Flowers attended a FOIA Express training. Administrative Officer Peterson attended several trainings, including DSLBD compliance, e-invoicing, and designated employer representative or DER training. Both of our 2 DLP interns have completed 7 different project management courses that were available for free through Skillport to help them plan and execute their assigned projects this summer. And I also attended the agency performance planning training that the City Administrator's Office conducted on June 26 to help get ready for our FY19 performance management preparation. Trainings outreach conducted by staff. Since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 4 trainings, which is a decrease from 11 reported at the board's last meeting. The trainings consisted of 2 new employee orientations, our monthly ethics training, and a training held at DOES. Senior Attorney Advisor Grimaldi also conducted a CLE on religion in the workplace. And the last item under this is the 2018 Ethics Day. Last year, BEGA held its annual Ethics Day on October 19th here at One Judiciary Square. And based on the large number of attendees and the positive reviews, the event was a huge success. This year, OGE is proposing that the board host an Ethics Day similar to last year's event, and a draft proposal of courses was placed in the board's Dropbox for your review.
I did see that a lot of them were very similar to the trainings from last year, which I thought were excellent. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. I'm sure you checked the drafts. There were a couple of grammar stylish issues, particularly as it relates to the credit hours and I think you're still filling in who's going to do some of the who's going to run some of the sessions. But
did you have an Ask Bega booth at last year's?
No.
That's a great idea. I like that. It's almost like the dunking app.
Let's see here. Advisory opinions, advice, informal advice, approximately 64 were issued. This compares with approximately 120 reported at the last meeting. However, the last meeting statistics included more than 50 calls concerning financial disclosure statement filings. Also, we received a complaint that an educational organization known as PAVE, Parents Amplifying Voices in Education, was recruiting parents to lobby the mayor and council. It was not clear whether the employees of PAVE were engaged in lobbying themselves, and that was not the allegation. Indirect lobbying, such as grassroots or quote-unquote AstroTurf lobbying, may likely not be covered by our statute. The complainant was advised of that, but one file a complaint nonetheless. We would have to find that employees of PAVE were themselves communicating with legislative or executive branch officials on the covered subjects for the matter to fall within the prohibitions of our statute, based on the definition of lobbying in the statute, which means communicating directly with any official in the legislative or executive branch of the district government with the purpose of influencing any legislative action or an administrative decision. And we wanted to engage the board on this issue to ensure you were of the same opinion. It's easy to understand why the complainant feels that an organization making a concerted effort to enlist parents to apply pressure on legislative or executive branch officials to advance the organization's policy goals should be considered lobbying activity by BEGA, and therefore we thought it was prudent to solicit the board's views on this issue before communicating a position to the complainant.
I just want to be clear, this is not a complaint. This is a request for advice.
I think it's probably both, because the person, they weren't completely satisfied with the response, so they did file I call it a complaint, but if the activity is not lobbying, it's just going to be an undocketed complaint. It's going to be dismissed.
I just want to make sure that it's appropriate to discuss this in a public session. If it is considered an informal complaint that hasn't been investigated and may even be dismissed, whether it is appropriate for us to discuss in public session. That's why I was asking the distinction. But we can...
I'd prefer to discuss that in the executive session.
We have no objections to that.
Okay.
And formal advice requests, we have received no formal advice requests since the board's last meeting. Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. As part of the Budget Support Act, the council included a subtitle to be cited as the BEGA Amendment Act of 2018. That subtitle makes a number of conforming and technical changes, but also requires lobbyists to file quarterly rather than the two times per year they now file. It also includes in the definition of lobbying procurement matters, specifically contracts, grants, reprogrammings, or the procurement of goods and services, so that persons who communicate with legislative or executive branch officials on these types of matters would also be required to register as lobbyists. The subtitle also addresses some of the agency's structural issues by clarifying that the director of OOG, like the director of OGE, reports directly to the board. It also permits OMA opinions to be appealed to the board. And finally, consistent with the constitutional mandate in the case of Free Enterprise Fund versus Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, 561 U.S. 477, a 2010 case, in which the U.S. Supreme Court held that the dual four-cause limitations on the removal of board members contravened the Constitution's separation of powers, the subtitle eliminated terms for either directors. Rulemaking. We have no new developments to report regarding rulemaking. Budget. There have been no new developments since the last meeting. Staffing, we have two permanent positions that are currently vacant, an attorney advisor position and a slot I've been trying to turn into an investigative auditor position. However, I've decided to turn the latter position into a third investigator position, especially in light of upcoming absences from the office with some of our staff members. And while Barry is willing to continue working for us in the fall, through an extension of his DLP internship that would help us provide additional bandwidth for auditing efforts. As you guys may recall, he is wrapping up his MBA degree from UDC in December, and he will continue working at OGE on a part-time basis through the fall semester. DCHR has extended an offer letter for our attorney advisor vacancy, and the selected candidate will be joining us at the end of July or the beginning of August.
Excellent.
And we have a new compliance specialist that is starting with us today. Apparently, I believe she's still at new employee orientation, but Nikayla Jacko-Red is filling that position. She is licensed to practice law in New York, New Jersey, Virginia, and D.C., and I believe she'll be an excellent addition to our staff thanks to her extensive experience working on complex white-collar and financial investigations as well as her strong interpersonal skills.
So we have no longer any vacancies in the attorney ranks?
Once the new one comes aboard, we'll have no vacancies.
Okay.
Other than, of course, the board's supervisory senior position that formerly was filled by Mr. Grimaldi, but no line attorney positions.
Right.
So is Ms. Red a temp?
It's a 13-month term, similar to the same appointment that Ms. Kaiser had.
Okay.
Litigation, status of pending cases, Garen Price, both Mr. Price and the district have filed their briefs. Mr. Price on July 3rd again requested an extension to file his reply. Edwin Adokwe, an FDS designation appeal, dismissal of petition announced by Judge Holman on February 8, 2018 in D.C. Superior Court. However, we continue to wait for the final written order from Chambers affirming the board's ruling. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014 after a contested hearing. Mr. Hicks' appeal to Superior Court was dismissed. The Superior Court dismissed the enforcement action without prejudice at the government's request. The OAG has informed us that the case will be refiled this week. Rashawn Frentz versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court case where an employee is appealing the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. We submitted the record in this matter to OAG on May 31st, 2018. OAG attorney Chris Sousa submitted the record we provided to him to Superior Court on June 5th, and the initial scheduling conference is set for July 13th, 2018. And the last matter is Jay Dillon versus Bega. This is an employment matter involving a separated employee. We are waiting on the administrative law judge's ruling on whether OEA has jurisdiction in this matter. Lobbyist financial disclosure statements. The financial disclosure season is settling down. Okta initiated FDS support, which is a help portal available on our website, and there were approximately 26 technical help requests queued in that application as of the end of last week. As of 3:30 p.m. on Friday, July 6th, only 465 of 3,542 required public financial disclosure statement filers still had not submitted their information, which constitutes an 86.87% compliance rate. Of the 465 remaining non-filers, 117 are ANC commissioners, while 77 are employed by DCPS, whose spam settings apparently blocked our notification emails, leaving only 271 non-filers spread across the rest of DC government. And we've provided the board with a statistical breakdown of the remaining non-filers' agency affiliations in the notes. So based on the foregoing, the number of non-filers for this FDS season appears to be relatively consistent with what has been observed and reported in previous years. Thus, we have no objections to proceeding to publish the lists of filers and non-filers in the DC Register pursuant to the statute or to publicizing the link to the search function for the new FDS system.
What contact have we made with DCPS to ensure they are aware of the requirement or that the notices went out?
Asia, do you have information about the specifics of our contacts with DCPS?
Good afternoon, Board.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we did notify DCPS of the large number of non-filers. I believe it was closer to the end of May or the beginning of June when we first discovered it along with Octo. And that's when we were told by Octo that the agency had individual spam blockers that were blocking our email communications. I guess when some sort of mass email is sent to their agency, their spam is automatically set up to block it as spam. And so they are aware of it.
Let me just ask you this question, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we get notifications all the time from the mayor's folks that, you know, go to everybody. And why aren't they blocked as spam?
Well, this is DCPS individual email setup. And so apparently you can do that. I did not know that you can do that.
I don't think you can do it with respect to anything the mayor sends out. I wonder what the setting is there that allows that to pass through the spam blockers.
That's a good question. According to Mark McDermott,
We should look into that for next year just to see if we can get either the mayor's cooperation on getting that same setting, whatever it is, to get the notice out.
Mm-hmm.
We're also assuming DCPS does not block those notices.
I don't think they are.
I assume that everybody gets the mayor's notices, but
I have to assume that also.
So to answer the question, we did make them aware when we first became aware of it. We haven't had any follow-up communication with them and to ask them a status of what they have been doing with regard to it. But I am in contact with they have two kind of ethics counselors that kind of work together there, and I am in contact with them when there's issues with new people filing and stuff like that.
Turning to the ANCs, is it my understanding that prior to this year we did not include ANCs in our list to the DC Register?
That is my understanding, that the list of non-filers that went to the DC Register did not include the ANCs who file certifications as opposed to the actual statements.
That's right, Asia?
As far as I can recall from last year, we did not include ANCs.
I don't remember.
Should we be reporting them? Is it required to include ANCs in the report? I guess that's a better question.
I mean, as far as I know, the financial disclosure rules apply to them just as they would anyone else.
Brian, do you remember what we did last year and why we did or did not?
I just don't think that we dealt with ANCs. I'm not sure it does cover them. We're talking about financial disclosure.
Right.
The rules aren't the same. We can look at it, make sure.
Yeah, let's take a look, because we do want to be consistent.
Correct. Okay.
Thank you, Asia. Okay, FDS partial waiver factors. At one of our recent meetings, the board suggested that OGE develop a set of factors to be applied when we are considering partial waiver requests to more formalize the process. We discussed this matter at our FDS lobbyist meetings and came up with five factors which seemed would warrant consideration of such a partial waiver request. And we are submitting these factors to you today for review and discussion. The five that we identified through our discussions were, number one, personal/physical safety concerns. Number two, reasonable, specifically articulable identity theft/security breach concerns. Three, secret/sensitive government or financial business concerns. Four, undue burden, which is known or referred to in the office as the FLEPS argument. And five, other, any kind of unique circumstances or matters of first impression.
Well thought out?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Next item we wanted to discuss was the FDS designation appeals. In order to complete my evaluation of one pending designation appeal, I am seeking the board's feedback on the review standard that should be applied in such appeals. Unfortunately, the language in DPM section 1810.8 gives no guidance whatsoever regarding the following issues, such as who bears the burden of proof? Is it the agency or the employee? What is the standard of proof? It is a preponderance of the evidence or clear and convincing evidence. And third, is there burden shifting at some point along the lines of what happens in discrimination cases under the McDonnell-Douglas decision, where the initial burden is placed on the employee to articulate some sort of discriminatory motive that they believe caused the negative employment decision, at which point the burden shifts to the employer to articulate a non-discriminatory legitimate basis for the decision. And because this really does involve some policy making, I felt it was incumbent upon me to engage the board in deciding which of these burdens and standards I should be applying in making the decision, because all the DPM says is that they have the right to appeal the agency's redesignation decision to the director, and that the decision of the Director of Government Ethics respecting the designation shall be in writing and shall be issued within 5 days of receipt and shall be final.
Yeah, this may be where we need some extra rules, don't you think?
Completely agree.
We don't have rules.
Right. Yeah, just that the only rule is is what's in the DPM. So if we're going to articulate the manner by which the director would exercise those powers, we would have to issue a new rulemaking.
Do you have of the three, do you have a recommendation?
I believe that historically we have given deference to the decision of the agency based on the theory that they know best what the employees' duties are. So I would be inclined to place the burden of proof initially on the employee and require them to make a showing by a preponderance of the evidence, at which point the agency would have the opportunity to rebut the evidence submitted by the employee, and then the director would make a decision based on the totality of the evidence.
It sounds good to me. I would leave it to your discretion and put it into a rulemaking that the board can review and approve.
Okay.
But, you know, just conceptually, it looks okay. I don't know. Chair, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to think about this a little longer, but I am inclined to agree with you. But let me think about it a little more.
Sure thing. In the meantime, we're going to withhold or refrain from doing anything in regard to that particular employee whose designation appeal is pending. I don't know how we would how we should proceed regarding including him on the list or maybe just omitting him from the list because the appeal still is pending.
Let's omit him from the list.
Agreed.
Okay, next item on my report is lobbyists, nonprofits. We have begun to receive payments from some of the 28 nonprofit organizations that Ishmael identified as not qualifying for the reduced registration fee, $50 versus $250 that was available to 501c3 organizations. I've asked the organizations to reimburse us for the underpayments related to the January 2017 and January 2018 registration periods. And to date, we have collected an additional $4,800 in lobbyist registration fees based on the results of Ishmael's audit. And if all 28 organizations bring themselves into compliance, we would receive an additional total of $11,200 in registration fees, including the $4,800 we've already collected.
Very good.
Lobbyist activity reports. Lobbyist reminders went out to all registered lobbyists on Monday, June 4th, 2018. The deadline for filing lobbyist activity reports, LARs, is July 10th, 2018. And as of the end of last week, we had received 119 lobbyist activity reports.
How does that compare with last year? And what system are we using?
We're using the old system. We felt more comfortable with it, given the experience we had with the FDS system. With the Begg Amendment Act of 2018 recently passing, is going to increase the filing time to four times per year versus twice per year. The council has asked us to engage the Chamber of Commerce and lobbyists in that development effort, and by pushing back the effective date of the more frequent filings until January 1st, that does build us much more time to get the system up to where it needs to be. But we discussed it internally, and we just felt more comfortable sticking with the old system, which may not be as user-friendly as we would like, but at least has functioned as intended.
And you are continuing to work with Octo and beta testing?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're still working with them. And I've been engaged with Stephen Miller in that process, and we just need to start scheduling more frequent, regular meetings where the lobbyists would be participating with us as well in that development effort. Mark McDermott was out on leave all last week, but I anticipate scheduling the first of those meetings to occur next week.
Norm, I might be off mute.
Can you put your phone on mute, please? Thank you.
Non-confidential investigations, Henry Rochelle Wilson. This is a formal investigation we discussed at the last meeting involving a former Aussie employee who, before her separation from the district government, failed to submit full, accurate, and complete financial disclosure forms for three consecutive years. Our negotiations with Ms. Wilson were not successful. We believe this is an appropriate case for the director to impose a ministerial fine on the respondent. We served notice on Ms. Wilson by certified letter and email, a notice of hearing, statement of violations in order to show cause why the director should not impose a fine against her due to her willful failure to file accurate forms. That hearing was originally scheduled for June 21st, 2018 at 10 a.m. However, Ms. Wilson had a conflict, asked that it be continued, and we have rescheduled it for later this month, but I can't remember the specific date. We just got that scheduled at the end of last week. And following her response or appearance at our offices, and it's my understanding she does intend to appear for the hearing, we will make written findings and issue a decision that can be appealed to the board consistent with the Ethics Act.
Okay.
Henry Courtney Snowden, this is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and order directed or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM sections 1807.1B and C. Number three, N. Ray Antoine Wilson and N. Ray Jennifer Niles. Pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 1, 1162.12A, we opened investigations into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles violated the Code of Conduct by transferring the Chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school after the start of school year 2017-2018. The board authorized this as a formal investigation recently, and we have since interviewed both the former Chancellor and Deputy Mayor for Education and several DCPS employees. Henry Jack Evans is the fourth item on the report. This is a formal investigation into whether Councilmember Evans violated the Council Code of Conduct by lobbying the Council on behalf of a client for a law firm at which he was employed. In addition, we received additional complaints that the member made false statements on recent financial disclosure statements regarding his outside activities and violated rules regarding outside employment. We have submitted a request to counsel for documents and continue to work with their general counsel's office and the members' counsel on securing those documents. And that is my report.
Thank you. We will now turn to public comment. I ask anyone who has a public comment to keep it to 3 minutes. We can start with you, Mr. Sindrum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The item of Councilman Evans in requesting documents, is there a deadline that's been set?
There has not been a firm deadline set. We're trying to cooperate with them. They've been very forthcoming with us, and we see no reason to believe that there's been any kind of improper pushback or refusal to turn over documents.
Because it's a serious matter, the public trust is at issue. I understand Mr. Garibaldi's moved on, so who now is taking the ADA 504 coordinator position with Vega?
Yeah, great question, Mr. Sindrum. That is Ashley Cooks, one of our attorneys. I have appointed her to take over as the ADA coordinator.
All right. Please forget me this go around. I was forgotten, and it's not good. Last but not least, I've asked Madam Chair, I want to connect with Tracy Hughes. If you would provide that information or the alternative to get Ms. Hughes my contact information.
I will get your contact information and email it to Ms. Hughes.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Any other public comment? Hearing none, I will now entertain a motion to move into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B-4A to discuss personnel matters, including the employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, removal or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B13.
So moved.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All right, the motion passes. The time is now 3:07. We are now in executive session.
Thank you.
What does he mean we forgot him?
I mean, he requested the physical copy of the agenda every time. And started to can't email it to him.
Okay. Can you email me his phone number? Thank you. We are getting, Ms. Allen, do you have any matters for us?
No.
Okay, so you can excuse yourself at this point, and we'll call you back in at some point. We're now going to talk about the OGE investigation. Thank you. It's just you. All right, the time is now 3:52. We are back on the public record. We have no matters to report out. The next board meeting will be August the 2nd, beginning at 2 a.m. Thank you.
10 a.m.
10 a.m. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.